The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 15, 2023. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all on this lovely gray day in autumn. Well, this morning, I just wanted to mention that this week on the Dharma Field, I'm sure this comes up, I think they come up randomly, but on the Dharma Field website homepage there, I saw this quote, which every time you tune in, you get a different quote or something like that. Anyway, it was a very interesting quote, which I've seen elsewhere, and it's attributed to Mark Twain. Though that's in dispute, I guess. It also has a ring of Will Rogers about it to me, I don't know. But interesting quote, you've probably have seen it perhaps on the website if you go there or elsewhere. But the quote is, it ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that ain't so. That's a very interesting statement. It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. Yeah, but we might think that that's how we get into trouble, because we meddle into things, get into things that we don't know enough about. Well, there's, of course, problems like that. On the other hand, you know, little children, they're constantly getting into things they don't know, but we tend not to blame them so much. We understand they haven't learned a lot yet in life. So maybe that's not the problem there. That's not what gets us into trouble. It's what we know for sure that ain't so. What we know for sure. Of course, we all think we know plenty of things for sure. We even fight about issues like this. I know something that you don't seem to understand. That sort of thing. And this can get us into trouble. There's things that we know for sure. And this matter of knowing, this is kind of a big issue. Well, it's an issue, but in Zen, this matter of knowing. And what is it that we know? For sure, especially. Well, what are we talking about there? What do you know? This is some idea you have, some belief. You're convinced of its truth, and you feel that you know this. When we look into Zen teachings, what the awakened have said about this, we don't find that. The stuff that we know for sure. We find something really quite different from that. If we look at, what is it? It's the first or second case of the Blue Cliff Record. I believe the first case, yeah. Bodhidharma goes before Emperor Wu. Emperor Wu tells Bodhidharma all these great things that he's done for Buddhism in China. But he's not satisfied with Bodhidharma's responses. He's rather consternated by what Bodhidharma has to say. So finally, in his consternation, he says, well, who are you standing here before me? And Bodhidharma said, not knowing. Not knowing. That's often translated into English and in various translations of the Blue Cliff Record, that Bodhidharma responds in various responses. A very common one is where Bodhidharma says, I don't know. That is completely wrong. If Bodhidharma had said, I don't know, well, then he's operating out of some idea. He knows something there. Even though I don't know, is the response that he gives the emperor. But he's acting as if he knows something. What, he knows that he doesn't know? Just in saying, I, already there's something planted there in that response. And Bodhidharma could not have responded in that way. Not if he's awake, which we can assume, at least for the sake of this particular teaching, that he is. But he says, not knowing, which the emperor finds very unsatisfying. And he dismisses Bodhidharma just like that. But this matter of knowing, it keeps coming up in the 69th case of the Book of Serenity. We have Nan Chuan, who's addressing the assembly, and he says, Buddhas of past, present, and future, all Buddhas of past, present, and future do not know it is. Cats and cows know it is. What is he talking about? The Buddhas, the awakened people, do not know what is. Cats and cows know what is. Sentient beings know what is. Sentient being, as it's often depicted here in Buddhist teachings, or in, particularly in Zen teachings, these are people and animals, I suppose, perhaps even plants, whatever, we can speculate on all of that. But it's referring to those who are living by their senses, out of their senses. And they know it is. That's often contrasted with the awakened ones, people who wake up to what's taking place here. Yeah, they have senses. They understand the information coming in through their senses, all of this. They can conceptualize it just as any of us can. But they're not taken by that. They're not caught by that. Whereas sentient beings live wholly out of what they take in. Well, it isn't just that. That would be fine if that's all it was. But they conceptualize the experience. Even cats and cows will conceptualize the experience. The immediate direct experience of just this, what is taking place. So this is kind of an important consideration in Zen, as a matter of knowing or not knowing. And it's often very confused in the way that it's spoken of and taught in Zen. People get some misunderstandings of this. Maybe we think that this not knowing is, the enlightened, they don't know anything? Well, maybe it's reserved for them, ineffable knowledge that they have, and we can't even speak of it. Is this what they have, perhaps? And we can speculate on this. For the rest of us, it's a mystery. It would be a big mistake to think that there's something dividing you from the awakened, because the awakened is sitting right where as you're sitting now, right where you're sitting. There's no separation here at all. But when we start to think like this, and what do the awakened see or think, or what do they know? That it must be something different, something ineffable. That would make it mysticism. And that would be a mistake. I remember years ago, Cal Appleby. Some of you know him. He's passed away now. But he was a member here at Dharma Field for many years. And this is before we started Dharma Field. But he had organized this kind of a conference or whatever, which he would do, and invite guest speakers from around the country or perhaps the world, I don't know, but to come together and give some talks. And he organized this one somewhere over, I don't know, I can't remember now where it was, but brought in speakers from elsewhere. I remember Houston Smith came and spoke, and that's where I met Houston Smith. Anyway, speakers would come from all over, and at Cal's invitation. And the topic was mysticism. And one of the speakers that he asked for this right here in town was Katagiri Roshi, you know, my teacher, Norm's teacher. So Katagiri Roshi went, and of course a number of us from the Zen Center, then we went to this conference, particularly to hear our teacher speak, Katagiri Roshi. But the title of his talk was No Mysticism, on a conference with the topic of which is mysticism. Having people to come in and talk about the various mystic or mystical traditions in the various religions around the world. So here's Katagiri Roshi kind of giving the Zen or the Buddhist angle on it. And it's no mysticism. He wanted to clarify that right out. That and this, of course, this term mysticism is very close to the word mystery. And as I was saying before, that if we can speculate that maybe the awakened have this ineffable knowledge. And it's ineffable knowledge, that's kind of what mysticism is. And some people have it. Then we call those people mystics. And for the rest of us, what it is that they know just kind of remains a mystery. And what is that true, deep knowledge of reality? And this is a mystery? Or that maybe when we go searching for this and we dig into the various teachings and practices, we will eventually work our way into this place where we, what, come to the mystery, or the deep mystery, the final mystery. Well, I remember years ago, shortly after, well, it was a while after our teacher, Katagiri Roshi, had died, and that was in 1990, and pretty soon after that, people were coming to me, to my house, you know, just sort of randomly and wanting to talk with me. And eventually it became more and more frequent. So I started just say, well, why don't we just come as a group? And so pretty soon we were having these, I don't know, what were they, weekly meetings or something. And eventually that developed into what we have here now, Dharma Field. But I remember I was at one of those meetings where I pointed out, I don't remember now what the topic was or what we were discussing, but I pointed out that there's no mystery. We wake up to reality, there's no mystery. I remember one person there who was so disappointed, no mystery? He said, you know, how disappointing. You know, I wanted to uncover some deep mystery here. Yeah, well, that's great, but that's not what this is. That would be delusion, actually, if you did that. And you would be deluded, just as perhaps you are now. You'd still be confused about what is going on here. To awaken to reality is not to still be confused about something. There's something left out here. I haven't quite, but I see it now. It's just that one bright shining thing over there. That's just the one mystery. Everything else is quite clear. Yeah, well, this would sort of be mysticism. And then you finally get to know that, you see that, but it's still a mystery. It's an unspeakable. Yes, maybe you know it in some way, but I cannot speak of it. It's ineffable. And Katagiri Roshi at this conference on mysticism, he said about Zen, the Zen angle on this is no mysticism, no mystery. So what is this exactly? And why do we, I'm sure many of us have felt various kinds of mysteries. You know, there's the mundane ones like, where did I leave my car keys? They seem to have disappeared, and, you know, it's a mystery. I can't find them, you know. Well, that's a mystery. Maybe eventually we would hope you can solve that one. But there's many depths of the kinds of mysteries we might experience, and perhaps in contemplating the deeper questions of life and reality and just the incredible, wonderful world that we experience here, be incredible in all sorts of ways and wonderful in all sorts of ways, also frightening and disturbing, but in many sorts of ways. But what is this all about? And why are we here? How did we get here? Did we get here? Did we get somewhere? You know, where are we now? But we'll have questions like this. I want to know. I want to put an answer there. And what we don't, unless we wake up, what we don't understand is that is the problem. You want to put something there. And the moment you do, the moment you come up with an answer, you supply yourself with that, or you're given this through your education or your religious education or whatever it might be, various philosophies you might study, or just studying the natural world through science, getting to know this and that. We come up with various answers to deep questions. And perhaps we think in certain cases, there are these individuals who even, the mystics, you know, who even seem to find this final answer. And they're called mystics. But what Katagiri Roshi was trying to help us see is that that's not Zen. It's really not Buddhist. There's all kinds of people in various Buddhist schools and that study this or that, and they come up with different kinds of answers, and then we have various teachings that they'll grasp as answers to certain kinds of questions, and perhaps to some degree that's the case. But ultimately, that isn't the case at all. Not if we're interested in truly waking up to reality. Truly understanding completely what is taking place here. Of course, we might have the belief, the idea, the grasp view that, well, we can't come to anything like that, you know. That maybe there is no ultimate reality or, you know, something like this. So how can I ever know that, find that? No one ever has. So we'll say, but we don't, if you say that, you don't understand what people who have truly awakened understand, what they see. You don't even understand that you see this too. Ultimately, what is true and real and genuine about just this? All you are ever having is a full and complete experience of reality. Not as an idea or a belief or a grasped view, an answer. And what we don't understand is that the moment you put an answer there, Now you have mystery. You have a question. You know, what is love? Well, when you just that question is coming out of the fact that if you can ask that, it's already some direct knowledge right there. But that isn't enough. The fact that we would ask a question like that, now we go searching for, can I come up with a word or an expression or something to explain what that is? If you look very carefully, you will see that there's mystery there. You put something there, you explain it, well, it's this or it's that. And you explore that a little bit in no time at all. Or you can explore it maybe depending on how much depth you can, you know, pull from that. Maybe you go quite a ways. But you're left with mystery. You get to a place where there's you can't supply the answer. But there must be one. In the case of the mystics, maybe they've passed me on somewhere. They're off there somewhere. They see something. You know. What do they see? Is it something that they've grasped? If they've grasped it, now they're formed, here they are, and there's all kinds of mysteries involved with that. All kinds of ways. The mystery of our bodies and how they function and how it is that we seem to be alive and have consciousness. And not only that, then we contemplate all the various mysteries. I mean, here we are. We're just constantly plunging ourselves back into what is this anyway? What is this all about? What we don't understand, unless we wake up to this, we don't understand what we're doing. We're just even in creating ourselves. That's why I said that Bodhidharma could not have said to the emperor, I don't know. He's forming himself. There isn't anything there that's the holder of this not knowing. But there is this not knowing, but not knowing is more of a matter of not holding an answer, not gripping an answer, not needing an answer. I mean, in all sorts of aspects of your life, yeah, we need answers to various things just in the mundane world that we live in. And that's very functional and useful and helpful in many ways. But when it comes to this matter of truly understanding what is taking place here, what is this? Not only do you not need an answer, but by supplying yourself with an answer or taking it from someone else who supplies it in a book or something they may have said or that they teach or whatever, and you think, oh, thank you very much. And we appreciate that. And it might be something very helpful in many ways. There's nothing wrong with any of that. But the actual resolution to the problem that we have, this problem of not knowing, is not satisfied by supplying something there. There's just simply this not knowing. And with this not knowing, were we to truly realize that this is at the bottom of everything you would pursue in wanting to grasp an answer. If you become obsessed with that sort of thing, you're going to start missing all of the delightful and wonderful things that are taking place around you. But then you'll start grasping some of those things too. But we don't need to do this. We can just enjoy this. We can partake in this, maybe in a sane way and in a sensible way, in a kind way, in a compassionate way. But we can do this with some understanding that there is no particular thing ultimately that I have to get to and grasp as if that will give me the understanding that I seek. you will constantly be chasing down a road that just will loop you back into the confusion that you've already experienced. The awakened do not awaken to an answer or to a solution or a concept or a belief or something of this sort. This is the problem, and to the degree that we really grasp it, whatever it is that we find as a thing, an idea, we're going to remain very confused and remain caught. It's a matter of stepping back and seeing what we're doing, what you each for each of us, what I'm doing myself. And for each of us, it's not for me to judge you as to what you're doing. I don't know. It's difficult enough for me just to keep an eye on myself before I become crazy again. So I mean, moment by moment, just I also don't mean to become obsessed with that, but just stay present. But include yourself with that, what you're looking at and considering. And at some point there is what we might call, or what is called, waking up or awakening. Something that's called seeing. If I write this seeing out, I always italicize that, because it's not seeing some particular thing. That one is, again, that would be just more grasping again. It's an objectless awareness that is already ours, so to speak, except the our part of it doesn't really pertain to anything, but it's already thus. Can't be missed. Even when you are distracted, it's still not missed because it's still thus. It's all this other stuff, this jabbering stuff, and this desperation, this reaching, and the obsessions. That's all dealing with formed things, just formed in the mind. I won't even say your mind, because that's just another form thing. But these forms are there. They come and they go. We have a teaching, a number of teachings that pointed out that these forms are empty. Empty of any kind of substantiality. That is how we can have them. That is how they appear at all. Isn't that wonderful? And so we have all of this. But we don't need to grasp it. We don't need to take parts of it and put it together in some way so I can come up with the right answer. And offer the whole thing, I mean, what? You're lucky enough if you can come up with an adequate answer for just some little thing. And that'll be limited. Might have some wonderful function in your life or for the life of the world. That's great. It could also have a very destructive nature as well, but keep your eyes open and look at what that is, both for yourself and for the world at large. So we can continue to do these things, but there's ultimately, to fully understand what is ultimately happening here, there's nothing there to grasp. I won't say there's nothing there, it's just us, this is nothing. But there's nothing to grasp. Nothing to get the idea about, nothing to take as a belief. Ah, this is true. Well, no. You're just going to end up fighting with other people who grasp something else. And what good is that? And of course, you can all devoutly feel like your way is right, or the best, or yours are wrong. We need to destroy you. This is human insanity. And it's endless. At least it seems to be. But it can end if you just wake up to what this is. But this is the part I haven't said yet. When I say that there's nothing to grasp, nothing to get out, no idea to form here that's correct or the right one, what is it that the awakened see, the enlightened? What do they see? What do they know? Well, it isn't some particular thing. whatever they see, just like you, any form thing there, formed as an idea or an object or anything at all, feeling. It's delusions. You can see that this is still delusion. So they don't grasp it. We're looking for something. We'll grasp. We'll easily grasp. But just look at that. Look at that. If you can finally see what this is and that and how we're caught and how we're formed and how caught. This is what awakening is. It's to just see this. Nothing changes. Just the forms still appear. Everything seems to be gone. But there's a freedom that comes with not being caught, carried away, thinking, oh, this is right and that is wrong. In Buddhism, we don't look in those terms. People end up teaching it that way because we have ordinary minds, the minds of sentient beings. And we're still caught. But if you can find the awakened teachings, nothing like that is ever stated or pointed out or said. It's a matter of finally waking up right here, seeing the confusion that is taking place right here within your own heart, within your own mind. And then just seeing that, there's no point in, don't condemn it. It isn't like this is bad and wrong, evil. It's very normal for human beings and for cats and cows to see forms and react to them and carry on as if it is just this way without realizing the lack of substantiality in the appearances. Carry on just as if it's all substantial. Yeah, there's the confusion, but it is quite possible to see through that and to not be confused. And that's what this way is. And so that not being, this is true knowledge. This is ultimately what can be known. I can't say that I know there's a microphone here on a stand next to me. All of this. That isn't something we can truly know. Not with an italicized no. It's something we can believe. It's something we can think. We probably devoutly believe that, yeah, there's a cup here. And, oh, my golly, there's water in it. I know that because I can see it. You probably can't see that, so we'll call that knowledge. And it is knowledge. It's small t truth, conventional knowledge. And there's nothing wrong with that. We don't condemn it, but just recognize its nature. But ultimately, is that really true? Just like the matter of love, yeah, whatever it is that we might use that word for something that we know. And then I'll just let that word be. Don't hang on to it too tightly or overuse it or anything. But there's a recognition of this. There's also hatred, even water. You go in for a careful look at the water and we find, oh, it's hydrogen and oxygen. And what are those? We just keep going in and eventually we get to mystery. Same thing with love or hatred. And we're mystified by it. But what we have to recognize is that mystery, that sense of not knowing in a sense of confusion and I don't know, that comes because we put something there. We reach for something. We expect something to be there. Same thing in like the awakening that is pointed to in Buddhist teachings, in Zen. This isn't something like that. It isn't anything you get hold of. I remember once speaking with someone who had a devout belief in a particular religion. I won't say it doesn't matter. And they were absolutely convinced that nirvana is Buddhist heaven. Something like that. And I said, well, no, that's not quite the understanding. Oh, yes, it is. And then when you die and if you do everything right, you'll go to heaven. This person didn't believe that. I thought it was all nonsense. but believed in a different kind of idea of heaven and what was required for that. And that's all fine. I mean, there you are. I wasn't trying to convince him otherwise. But it was also very upsetting, and he was very upset with me, he seemed to think that I thought of Buddhism, and really deep down I believe that nirvana is a heavenly abode of some kind. I had no such understanding of that at all. But there was no point in trying to convince him of that. And if I did have an understanding, well, no, I'd be just as upset as he seemed to be, even though he had this wonderful vision of heaven, and that he could go there, if he made all the right moves, I guess, or something. But this is, and I don't mean to condemn that, I'm just trying to point out, this is human confusion, and people who get caught up or get into the Buddhist way or whatever can bring a lot of that confusion with them and misinterpret what the awakened have pointed out to us. But what is so important here, and it's really a matter of just paying attention to your own mind and your own heart and all you're carrying on and behaving, and if you're just a lot of upset with different things, to look at yourself. And how true is it? And do you really know that? Do you know this? If you really explore that, you'll see that you're going to end up with something we call mystery, even though there's nothing about this that's mysterious. It's all immediately at hand. And there's real freedom in realizing that and truly knowing that. It isn't like knowing anything else or knowing something or that or another thing. It's not like that at all. It's not that kind of knowing. That's believing. That's thinking. That's grasping. That's hypothesizing. There's just an immediate realization of what is taking place. We do experience this already. It's not a matter of figuring it out. There's nothing to figure out. It's just wake up. But that waking up really does involve recognize the confusion that is otherwise there. That's what we wake up to. Dogen speaks of this in Genzo Kwan, I think, where he says that, but basically he just says that, and what enlightenment is realizing delusion. We're otherwise deluded about enlightenment. We have ideas about it. But the actual experience of awakening, there's no idea there. The Buddhas don't know what is. They don't put something there. The moment we put something there, once again, now we're caught in confusion. And if we're not careful, pretty soon we're going to start fighting with others about it. So, anyway, I've said enough this morning. Any questions? Anybody out on Zoom there? If you have a question? Yeah, Roger.
Just a big comment about Mark Twain. I used to teach Mark Twain, and I taught Huckleberry Finn a number of times. Mm-hmm. And it's a banned book now, but black people, I would say, they object to it. But Huckleberry Finn is about a crucial moment of not knowing. Mm-hmm. Because Huckleberry has been taught in Missouri since he was a child that black people are inferior, and it's appropriate they are slaves.
Yes.
And he happens to end up on the raft with a black man named Jim who wants to escape. Mm-hmm. And so in the climax of the book, which is around chapter 32, Huckleberry says, "It's a terrible thing for me to help a black man escape, and I think I'll probably go to hell for doing that." But he says, "I think I should help." I'm not quoting exactly, but essentially it says, it's a first-person narrative, by the way, mm-hmm. which is very important.
Yeah.
It speaks right.
Right.
He says, you don't know about me unless you've read a book at the beginning named Tom Sawyer. But he says, I decided I should help Jim escape, and if I go to hell, that shocked some Christians. So black people don't like the portrayal of Jim, and certain Christian people have always thought that was absolutely disgusting, that Huckleberry Finn, and he had some moment of not knowing what he was supposed to know, he rejects it on the graph.
And I think that comes out of what Mark Twain was recognizing and bringing out, is that we do know the truth. We do know reality. So he was acting out of that. And we can find that. And you might still be confused about it and think, well, I'll go to hell for this or whatever, but actually, I think if you just keep looking at that, you'll realize you're fine. You know, act out of the whole, not out of the confined idea, belief about this or that. But I think we all know this. It's just a matter of quieting your heart and mind enough to, of course, here's our practice of meditation. Just learn to settle down. Sit down. See it's there, what's there. And what's there is reality, truth. Just don't say anything, or you'll miss it. Yes?
Yeah, maybe less of a question and an observation that I'd like to get your reaction to. But when I think about, you know, my experiences and leaning into not knowing, the initial response from my body is often uncertainty and fear.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in concepts of certainty in your mind, there's a sense of security that exists. So just be interested in your reaction to that dynamic.
Yeah, well, if you look at that security that's in your mind now, because you believe this, or you think that, I have the answer here now. But if you continue to look at that or act on it and just stay with it, you'll start to see the, that there's no floor under this, you know, and there's no real support for it. Whereas if we drop that, you can recognize you don't need support at all for just this. I mean, here we are right now. And whatever it is that we think we need to bring us here and keep us going and all that sort of thing, we can make up all sorts of things about that. But if we just continue to look, we'll realize no matter what plank we walked out on, you know, there's no real foundation for any of us on any point like that. And yet, here we are. That's another thing my teacher said when he talked about no mysticism. He said there's basically just two things in Zen, you know, it's just the recognition that here it is. So we say the Buddhas don't know it is, and, you know, but here it is. But the other aspect that's right there with it is, what is it? And most of us never get past, here it is, and then we get some idea or whatever comes our way, and we grasp that, and here it is, and here it is. Oh, that one's bad. Here it is, but it's bad. But unless we are on our way to waking up, we'll never take a look at that. And realize there's this question now, what is it? And for a long time, we might feel like, oh, well, I have to answer that question. But ultimately, we can see, no, you don't need to answer that question. I'll be talking about this kind of thing. There's a course I'll be teaching in a couple of weeks. What is it? Non-difference of relative and absolute. Yeah, that's what it's really a. It'll be on a particular teaching that we have on the merging of difference and unity. But I'll get into this sort of thing a little bit in that course. For those of you who may have taken that course from me before on the Sandokaya, the merging of difference and unity, this will be a radically different way than I've ever taught it before. So just to let you know, you won't be repeating the same course. But anyway, thank you.
Has a question.
Okay, yeah, hi Frank.
Hey, Steve. So, in Zen, we talk about the don't know, and maybe it should be the don't conceptualize mind, because we do know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, the In my latest book, The Grand Illusion, I have a glossary in there, and this matter about no, there's no, there's just our standard kind of knowing, which is just having an idea, and then there's true knowing, which is different. But these are, they go by the same words, so that's a problem that we have. I'd have to invent a new term and then somehow figure out a way to get everybody to start using it, and that's a tall order, so so I think we're just kind of stuck with it. Most of what we call knowing is just believing or conceptualizing. It's conjecture, it's hypothesizing, but we say that we have ideas about this or that, and we call that knowing. Of course, then we'll also say things like, well, I know that my feet are on a floor here. Yeah, well, sure, and that's kind of a conventional sort of knowing, and there's nothing wrong with that. So there are kind of like two ways of knowing. There's a conventional kind of knowing, but we confuse that and think that that's ultimate knowing, that we actually know the truth there then, that ultimately it's true, my feet are on a floor. Ultimately, we can't say that, and I could demonstrate that, but I can't now this morning, we don't have time. but I point that out in many other places. But it is like, it would be nice if we had, say, two words for this, but that's where we are, at least in English. So, yeah, you had something else there?
Like how you capitalize.
Yeah, that's...
I don't think that's taught up with...
No, that's just me attempting to kind of sort these things out. Absolute and relative. Yeah, I might get into a little bit of this again, too, in that class I'll be doing coming up soon here.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.